Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I tell you, I wish I had this guy's job, to travel the world doing so many things. So I'm so excited to welcome the program from CNN's The Wonder List, Bill Weir. Bill, thanks for calling in. How are you?
I'm really well, Neil. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, man, I remember you. I'm watching you on television forever. So you've traveled the world before, but this is so much different, isn't it? The Wonder List.
It really is.
We're covering out their stuff, yeah.
It really is, yeah. No, I was, you know, like a decade at ABC News, and they send you into a war zone or a hurricane, and you sort of lash yourself to a lamppost for a few days and then bail, right? And all those times, yeah. I, as much as I enjoyed that, I always fantasized about what would it be like to hang out here for a couple weeks, really get to find some amazing characters and tell the bigger stories of how our world is changing. And so that was the pitch, you know. I said, I got this little girl who's going to turn my age in 2050, so what's the planet going to look like then? You know, will we still have wild lions and tigers? Will there still be perfect little islands in the South Pacific? What is Machu Picchu and Iceland, you know, Bhutan going to be like if they're swarmed with, you know, the new rich tourists? So that's the idea.
And traveling that world, and you probably discovered that from covering so many events before that, what's this world, what's going to happen, you know, especially when you see, we are so lucky in so many ways living in the United States and what we have compared to other countries, especially third world countries and developing countries, that you saw that firsthand through covering all those events with ABC and stuff, correct?
Correct. Yeah, no, absolutely. I always say that if there was some way we could give every American citizen a passport and an unlimited credit card and say, go visit 20 countries, it doesn't matter where, we would have vastly different ideas about our own politics, our own foreign policy. And a lot of times I go into these places, you know, as an American, through American eyes. I went to Cuba for the premiere thinking, all right, there's 10 million pent-up capitalists down here waiting for the Castros to die, and they want to turn this place back into Godfather 2. But you get down there, and it's a much different reality. And I found that again and again. I had my mind blown, and that's why it's such a gift as a journalist and a storyteller that they give me the time and space to just explore and take people along to figure out, you know, what's going to happen to our planet.
Yeah, what's going to happen is the question we have to ask ourselves, and for sure. And the preparation involved for each place that you're traveling to, especially for the season. How did you prepare for those travels so that, you know, you're having the, you know, the right itinerary to make sure you cover the right types of stuff? Tell me about that.
Well, sometimes it starts with something, as the idea could start as simple as reading a tweet. So, for example, last year I was on my Twitter feed, I saw some demographer put out a list of the countries, leading countries with unwed mothers. And at the top of the list was Iceland. And like 2 out of 3 babies born in Iceland, their parents aren't married. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. What would a country look like if they've given up on the idea of marriage? And so following that thread, I want to go to a wedding. I want to talk to as many different people, you know, men and women, try to understand this. I want to talk to the president. But at the same time, I want to hike a glacier, and I want to visit a volcano, and I want to, you know, dive in this rift between the continental plates and this amazing lake. And so it just kind of it just snowballs from the original idea. And that's, as I was saying before, is what's so gratifying is once you get on the ground in a lot of these places and just go where the story takes you, it's so much more enlightening than going in with sort of a preconceived set of notions, like the way I did in Cuba. You know, I had my mind blown by the attitudes and the realities of how life really is and not just what we think it might be or what it should be.
We have to stay tuned. So basically, a lot of times the news drives you for the next season in certain ways. And different tweets and different situations say, I want to discover more. And I'm sure you learn so much more than you expected every place you go, you travel to. Am I correct?
That, yeah, Absolutely. Every place. You know, we went to, you know, big game hunting was in the news recently with Cecil the Lion and and all of that. And so we went to Africa and went to the country that's banned hunting and the one next door that thinks hunting is part of conservation.
Oh, wow.
And it changed my mind. I mean, I went in with a very, very strong feelings about the ethics of this. And once you get over there and see the real story, you can't help but see it in a different way. Same in Bhutan, where there's this little Buddhist kingdom up in the Himalayas where they had a king for 100 years, but he decided to turn the place into a democracy and build the entire country around gross national happiness. And they, you know, we have a pursuit of happiness in our Declaration of Independence, but they pursue it in such a different way. So a lot of times it's are we going to steal the best ideas from these places and try to apply them to our own lives, or will the American dream sort of engulf them because we are such a model for the rest of the world? And that's what's interesting, too, is to, you know, I've been traveling through most of this election and to see, you know, the rise of Donald Trump from Africa or from Asia is a whole different, they have a whole different perspective on it than what you do.
And I think and when you talk about Buddhists and their belief system and all these different things, that's so amazing. So last season, was it almost the same way that you kind of went out the first season and went to these places? Or do you think it was after doing the first season, you said, this is the direction I want the show to go? Or is it almost the same as last year? I remember watching one of the episodes, but Bill, now I'm like, okay, this is going to definitely be on my list throughout summer to catch up and all this stuff or watch it on demand.
Yeah.
All of your episodes, because I have a degree in history, undergrad in history, and I'm like, this is so educational. It really is.
Yeah, you know, the most gratifying sort of feedback I get is from people who say it's the one show I sit down with my family and watch, you know, on a Sunday night, in the way that Wide World of Disney did when I was a kid, or, you know, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. That's very gratifying here. And also from teachers. I just got a tweet this morning from a teacher and a college professor who's showing one of my episodes to his class on just cultural sensitivity. But yeah, that's what we're looking to do is there's a sense of adventure and beauty that propels people, that sucks people in. But while you're there, hey, let's learn a little something and understand the world in a fresh way. But the show is really the bones of it are the same, but we got a lot better when it comes to production. Our team, you know, first season we were just getting to know each other, but in terms of the photography and just the sheer visuals are better this year. And I think, you know, having to write all these hours, I've gotten stronger as a storyteller in this genre where I was used to doing breaking news before. So hopefully if you like season one, you'll love season two.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, season two premieres March 20th, this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, and also the upcoming season, what's the first episode about? Where are you traveling the first?
We're going to Cuba. So the Obamas are headed to Cuba next week, and the Rolling Stones are playing there, so it's timely. It's in the news.
It is.
You know, they're about to start commercial flights. Everybody dreams about Cuba, so we're going to show you what the reality is. And also, just a note, because you're kind enough to plug it, on Saturday night at 10 o'clock, if you want to set the DVR, we're running a marathon of season one. So if you ever saw the show or you heard about it and want to see it, you know, if you're rolling in from the bar on Saturday night, I'll be there on CNN.
Oh, I'll definitely have to check that out for sure and tape it, because I really want to be able to DVR it, because I really would love to catch up on that, especially with the thing. So best place to find information on you, Bill, you have your Twitter and stuff that people can find you too. Where can we find you on Twitter?
Sure. It's Bill Weir CNN at Twitter, and we're all over Facebook, and any Google the Wonderlist. We got a great homepage at CNN.com.
Well, I can see you really enjoy this show, and best success and luck with it. And I'm definitely going to be tuning in, so thanks again for calling.
My pleasure, Neil. Good talking to you, brother.
Take care, Bill. See you later. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Titter, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Titter, Pinterest Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Titter. And this guest is promoting a show, a guy, one of my favorite characters. So I'm so excited to welcome the program. Celebrity Jessica Poli, star of Pee Wee's Big Holiday on Netflix. Jessica, thanks for calling and how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Jessica. I don't know, I guess I'm dating myself in so many ways. I watched Pee Wee's Big Adventure so many different times. Certain parts are just iconic for me. I can remember specifically certain scenes and could just go and go over them over and over again. Just something about Pee Wee Herman. So when you were asked to audition for this and then got the part, it must have been amazingly a great opportunity for you.
Oh, yeah, it was absolutely thrilling. And, I mean, I'll go ahead and date myself with you. I grew up watching Pee Wee's Playhouse and Pee Wee's Big Adventure as well. So it was really surreal.
Oh, definitely. Think about when Pee Wee was so popular. You're right, Pee Wee's Playhouse, but also Pee Wee's Big Adventure for sure. And how Netflix brings back these great characters. It's fantastic. I'm just really excited to see this.
Yeah, it's a really great movie, and I think people are going to love it.
Jessica, tell me about your character in the movie and stuff like that.
Yeah, I play a character named Pepper, who is the head of an all-girls gang of bank robbers. And essentially, tiny spoiler alert, we hijack Pee Wee's car and adventure ensues.
And so how was it to work with Paul? How was that? Tell me.
Oh, it was really fantastic. You know, Paul is, I didn't know what to expect. I grew up watching him. He's been a comedic sort of hero of mine for many years.
Yeah.
And I just had no idea what to expect. And I was so pleasantly surprised at how incredibly down to earth and generous he is. I was sort of the newcomer on the set, and he just took me under his wing and went out of his way to make sure that I was always comfortable and knew what was going on. And it was just a real dream to work with. He's such a professional. He's really calm, cool, collected on set. And it was just the vibe on the set was really, really great.
And who else did you learn from, especially the other cast that's on in this film and stuff, to basically learn from and stuff, especially with the comedic and the whole pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who else did I learn from?
Yeah.
I mean, I learned watching the movie. I learned from some of the greats. I mean, certainly Lynn Stewart and her versatility. She plays a very different character in this movie than she does in the Playhouse. And, you know, I was, so the gang of bank robbers that I'm in, it's me and then Stephanie Beatrice, who plays Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Alia Shawkat, who, of course, we all know from Arrested Development. And
yeah.
I learned a lot from working with those girls, too. I mean, they're both just rad. I mean, they were just great humans. And I think there's a lot of, working in Hollywood, I've worked with a lot of people who have, you know, huge egos or throw shade or anything like that. There was none of that on this set. It was just a bunch of really solid professionals who are actual talents, like really, really talented people, and don't really have any false airs. So I learned how to conduct myself really well on set by watching these people, because they are all such professionals.
And that's the great thing. And then you take that and you continue to grow as an actor. You're able to go on to the next opportunities and learn from it. And learn, especially because I was watching one of your YouTubes with some of your comedy. And also I was checking out the trailer. And I tell you, you can learn from these films and move on to the next thing. People will say, okay, all right, Jessica was so hilarious in Pee Wee's Big Holiday. Now it's the next opportunity as an actress. Where do I go next? And then that's always the fun thing about evolving and learning from these experiences.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, if you've seen, I'm like, I don't know, I didn't know anyone watched those, but if you've seen my weird characters on YouTube, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I'm checking out now.
That's sort of my greatest joy, is developing characters that are really far outside of myself. And I hope I'm lucky enough to have a career that spans like a really broad range of wild, weird, quirky, over-the-top characters. So I've been doing that for a couple of years anyways over at Groundlings, just, you know, on my own with friends. It's amazing to be able to do it on the scale of a Pee-wee movie and you know, step it up a notch. Really great learning opportunity, like you said.
Exactly. So are you a comedian? Do you do comedy as well, Jessica? Improv? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, I mean, I certainly hope you don't think that any of my YouTube characters were dramatic characters. They're all...
No, not at all.
They're all
for the listeners
to know.
You
know, I've done a lot. I've spent... Many of my formative years were in theater, and so I've played Lady Macbeth. I've played Caliban. I've done a lot of more dramatic and classical work, and that's hugely important to me as well. But certainly since I landed on the ground in LA, in a sense, LA tells you what LA wants from you. And I didn't really know what part of my performance was going to draw the most attention, but people seem to be asking of me more comedic characters for sure.
All right. So when is Pee Wee's Big Holiday going to be available on Netflix? When is the launch date?
Been available since March 18th.
Okay.
We had our premiere at South by Southwest on the 17th, a couple of days ago, and you can finish listening to this interview and go watch it. It's available right now, and it's available, which is so cool, globally, because Netflix just went global a couple weeks ago, and it's really just an amazing thing to be a part of, just knowing that as soon as this dropped on the 18th, everybody across the globe was able to watch it at the same time.
Well, fantastic, and you know how busy those weekends are now. Monday, it's like, okay, let's go ahead, let's check it out right now. You know, I had a crazy weekend with birthday parties and different things, so definitely going to check it out. Jessica, where's the best place if we can find information on you as well? Where can we go?
You can find me on Instagram. I post a lot of stuff, and I've got a Facebook page, check out my silly videos on YouTube.
All right, so it's available right now. Go to Netflix, pick up Pee Wee's Big Holiday. Thanks for calling, Jessica. Best of luck with the movie and all your next ventures. Take care.
Thanks so much.
See ya. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Author's Corner. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program New York Times bestselling author of Rich Bitch, I Never Thought I'd Be Saying This on the Radio, A Simple 12-Step Plan for Getting Your Financial Life Together, Nicole Lappin. Nicole, thanks for calling.
Thanks. Great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I gave the opener, and I said I never thought I'd ever say that title in my years of radio so far, but I tell you, you got to be so impressed to be a New York Times bestseller. I mean, that must really be a rewarding thing, isn't it, for your career and all the things you've done?
Oh, my gosh. It's totally surreal. Yeah, absolutely. The day the list came out, I was like, whoa, there has to be a typo here. But it just showed the success of the product and, you know, what I was talking about was something that a lot of young women needed, and there was a void in the marketplace. So it, you know, hopefully filled that void, and a lot of folks are getting use out of it, which, you know, I couldn't have asked for anything more.
Well, we're seeing financially, Nicole, how many people are struggling, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, credit cards, debt out of the wazoo, and all these different financial experts so fantastic that your message is coming out there and people are saying, okay, I want to follow what she's doing. Some of these other people are telling them this. We know some of the other gurus out there, and you're becoming respected to that level. Can you tell me specifically how we can get our financial life together? Look at what we've heard about in the last 10 years, how, you know, certain household incomes have not gone up, and people keep spending and spending and spending. How can we stop this insanity and save our money and live a better life?
Yeah, so I think it's about first coming up with a spending plan you can actually stick to. A lot of folks don't realize actually how to budget in the first place. And so I break it down to the three E's, which is essentials, extras, and end game. And I like alliteration, so I kind of keep it that way. And essentials is everything you need to live on every single day. So your housing, your food, your transportation, that accounts for 70% of your overall budget. And then 15% goes to your end game. So the future you, what do you want to do for vacation? What do you want for your retirement? What do you want for your investments? All of that should be about 15% of what you bring in. And then 15% should be the extras. So all the fun stuff that you want, the latte, the, you know, yoga class, whatever does it for you. I don't tell you how to spend, but allow that in there so you stay on track and don't end up binging later on.
And I think that's it. And especially when the audience you're speaking to, Nicole, you're speaking to everyone, but you brought up especially women. It's very hard to tell a woman. And I'll tell my wife the same thing when we were in a few little credit card issues a couple years ago. You can't spend anymore on any of the things that really are fun. What happens is there's a lot of friction. I'm happy we're out of that now, but, I mean, that's the challenge, that if you aren't able to purchase some stuff it's fun, it just becomes like you're just going around a wheel, and there's nothing, and it's Groundhog Day every day. And you have to have those little things that you like, right? And I saw that while I was watching a couple of your television interviews. Am I correct? It's something that you got to have, or else you're gonna give up.
You're gonna go crazy, and you're gonna go end up binge on some, you know, fancy pair of shoes or whatever, you know, because you feel so hungry and so deprived. I mean, think of a financial diet like a regular diet.
Yeah.
If you have a crash diet or some, you know, crazy juice cleanse or master cleanse or whatever, you're going to lose some weight, but you're going to feel so hungry, and then you'll end up binging on, you know, a hunk of chocolate cake in the middle of the night because you're so deprived. If you allow yourself for a sustainable eating plan that allows a Hershey's Kiss, not a hunk of chocolate cake, you'll stay on track because you won't, you know, you won't feel like you're missing out on some chocolate. So allow yourself that equivalent in a financial diet, which is your latte, which is whatever the small thing is. You just don't feel like you're cutting everything out cold turkey.
That's so true. Because you're right. If we don't, and we're on a regular diet, deprive ourselves of everything, at one point we're going to get off it, and we're going to say, forget it, and we're going to binge. And if we binge financially, it could destroy us a lot worse than our weight. You know, gaining 20 pounds, but, you know, putting yourself in financial debt that you can't bury yourself out of. How quick is it to spend 20, 30 grand on a credit card? As fast as can be. You know how hard it is to pay it off? A lot of work. So you really have to have that plan in action. And what have you heard? Again, this is your paperback issue is coming out now. Since the book has been out, what has been the feedback from your readers that they've gotten so much that they like about your plan compared to others?
Gosh. It's, you know, it's really exceeded all of my expectations because I think we don't learn this stuff in school. It's crazy to me that we learn this Pythagorean theorem. We learn all this, you know, I went to fancy college and learned these economic theories, but nobody taught us how to budget, do taxes, get out of debt, like all the basic stuff. And so for me, I didn't work at a bank. I didn't get my MBA. I just grew up in an immigrant household, got my MBA at the School of Hard Knocks, figured it out the hard way. And so I don't speak in jargon. And so when I talk to folks about money. I just talk in the way that I talk to my girlfriends about it. Like, I don't use fancy words. I don't hide behind that stuff. If I don't understand it, I'm not going to explain it to somebody else. And I think I'm kind of a smart chick, so I like to figure stuff out for myself. And so I think that's resonated the most, and just that I use unconventional language to talk about a typically boring topic that folks want to bury their head in the sand when thinking about. And, you know, you probably, your family knows firsthand how much stress it can cause, how much you can sort of break out of the hives thinking about it.
Oh, it's terrible.
And so.
Yeah, I was saying, yeah. Nicole, it's terrible. It's just, it's something where it's the worst thing in the world, and you can bury yourself so quickly. And that's the thing, and that's so great. Your book's out, and I love the fact also your reality program Hatched, and it's about American investors of all different types of people. And so you're looking at entrepreneurship too. Two things: entrepreneurship and financials need to be taught more in schools. I'm a former school teacher on a tutoring and consulting company, Nicole, and that's the major thing. Those two things need to get in our curriculums so much, because people need to learn entrepreneurship, and they need to learn how to manage their money. Agree?
I 1,000% agree. Totally. And entrepreneurialism is such a, you know, big driving force right now. It's so much part of our zeitgeist. A lot of folks are thinking of starting your own podcast, or thinking about starting their own business, or thinking about, you know, going off on their own. And what's great is that it's easier now than ever before to become your own boss. And what the flip side is, cuts both ways, is that it's easier now than ever to become your own boss, which is a scary thing, because you can just get a Kinko's and write up a business card that says CEO on it. And so, yes, you can do it, but, like, not everybody should do it. So it's really about figuring out, you know, what you should know, the real deal of starting a business, if it's right for you, if that's the game you should be in, if you should sort of focus on your side hustle while you're, you know, working somewhere else. There are a lot of opportunities, but with that comes, you know, a lot more responsibility in terms of educating yourself. If you're not taught, you can't make an excuse for that.
Agreed.
You need to figure it out the hard way. Yeah.
All right. Best place you can purchase your book and learn more about you, Nicole. Where can we go?
Oh, you're so sweet. Anywhere books are sold right now, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all that jazz, you can get it on NicoleLappin.com, or, you know, find me on all the social media outlets as well.
Love to continue the conversation. On the CW, when can we is that season over for the show, the CW, that you did?
No, it's airing all year, and it's on Saturday mornings. It's, you know, check your listings. It's typically around 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's a fun family show that teaches the entire family about what it's like to start a business and financial literacy.
All right. Well, Nicole, thanks for calling. Thanks for taking the time, and best of luck.
Thank you so much.
See you later. You're welcome.
Care.
Bye-bye. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Tutor, Pinterest Neil Haley, and Google Plus Neil Haley, also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And my guest today is going to talk about the movie Batman versus Superman, but also his book. So I'm excited to welcome the program NPR pop culture correspondent Glenn Walden. Weldon, you're the author of The Cape Crusade, Batman, and the Rise of the Nerd Culture. Glenn, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Now, Glenn, I'm going to bring us back, and you might not think, I want to talk the old days for some reason. The old days of Batman and Superman. I'm 43, Glenn, and growing up, I watched the older shows. Even though the new movies were coming out, I came back and watched a lot of the Batman and Superman you know, TV shows. And that's the kind of stuff that I remember as a kid, and remember specifically of the Cape Crusader, and to think of Batman versus Superman. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? An interesting proposition, what they're putting out on the silver screen, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, Batman has been many different personas over the years. He started out very dark, but that went away in about a year. And then for about 30 years, he was basically a cop in a cape in a sunlit Gotham City, and very cheery. And that's exactly what the television show was. I mean, they were kind of playing it for laughs, but that they were just playing it very straight, dutiful to those comic books. But then the nerds were rising up at the time. They hated the television show, and the sales of the Batman comic plummeted, so they decided they would create a Batman who was the opposite of Adam West, the opposite of careful chum, pedestrian safety, the opposite of that guy. And that's how we got the Batman we have today, the kind of grim, gritty, growling, swear to me Batman. And it's a cycle. It keeps going on.
Who do you like better, Glenn? Do you like the Batman? Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up like you. I grew up watching the reruns of the Batman television show. That's the one that kind of appeals to me, just because they're comic books. I think they should be fun. If we take it too dark and let and make it so that kids can't see these films, then we're kind of defeating the purpose. Did you ever watch the animated series?
No, I never watched the animated series. Maybe I did when I was a kid. I can't remember. I'm not dating. I don't know how old you are, Glenn. I'm 43, and I just. I don't remember correctly. I just remember watching it. Like, remember when the first Batmans came out? It was so exciting. You know, meaning the ones in the 90s. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
can't
sure.
wait to see it. Well, and then I'm going to go back and catch up on all the stuff I did watch as a kid, but I love it. And, you know, you think about a hero, a superhero. You can't think of Dark Glenn. That's what I think our society lost the whole aspect of hero. And if you're a superhero,
Well, I mean, superheroes exist to be ideals. They work on a kind of emotional, very simple, elemental level, and they're supposed to be inspirations. What happened in the 70s is that readers of comics were suddenly older than they were even 5 years before, and they wanted more angst. They wanted more reality. In fact, it just got much, much darker. And we are coming with this Snyder film, Batman vs. Superman, to the height of the violent, grim, gritty circle. I have a feeling the wheel's going to turn again, and we're going to go back to something a little bit more hopeful, with a little bit more light in it.
And see, I don't even know the premise in the whole thing about Batman vs. Superman. Who's supposed to be good and who's supposed to be evil in this?
Oh, there's some kind of elaborate misunderstanding, and they'll come to blows, but then they'll realize that they've been duped, and then they'll join up to fight the common enemy. That goes back in comics. That's kind of the Marvel comics, especially perfected that. There's some kind of misunderstanding which causes two heroes to fight, so nerds can figure out whose butt can get kicked by whom, and talk about it and obsess over it. So I don't begrudge them that. I just begrudge them the tone, the unrelieved, morose tone of these films.
Yeah, and I think you saw from the commercials, the television commercials they were running during the Super Bowl, that Batman's going to be duped in some sort of way. And it's always Batman duped, because if you have superpowers, superpowers give you a little bit more of a leeway that you're not going to be duped, or who knows which one will be duped.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I was telling a lot of the nerds I spoke to for this book is that Batman does have a superpower, and that's his wealth, which makes everything possible, and that's what makes him as much of an unbelievable hero as Superman is.
Yeah, for sure. And from the book, I think that what did you learn from writing about this and researching, you know, like how people that are comic book fans were disappointed with the weak Batman and like this Dark Knight and things like that. What kind of things were they telling you from, you know, the research and writing this book?
Well, I mean, they tell themselves that the reason they like Batman is because he's relatable. They think, in a country like America, we all believe that we could become a billionaire if we try really hard. I don't think that the roots in the fandom as much as he would in a different country that doesn't have that American dream. Because he exists to say, if you try really hard, you can perfect your body, you can perfect your mind. Superman exists to kind of be an unrealistic ideal that we're always striving to achieve, but Batman holds out the promise that we could become him someday. The thing I love about nerds is that our enthusiasms are pure, they're unironic. The thing I don't like about nerds is that they can become like we're hoarding the thing we like. We begrudge the fact that other people like it. We say, you don't like it because for the same reasons that I do, therefore you're doing it wrong. So we're at a point now in culture where nerd culture is becoming just plain culture, and I don't exactly know what's next, but it's fascinating to think about.
I draw a parallel of the comic book world and the professional wrestling world. And I
sure,
don't know,
absolutely.
I was a former professional wrestler, and the business was very secretive, And then we finally open it up to the fans. The fans pretty much call and say what they want now, which, again, has gotten to the point where kids can't go. And the love of what professional wrestling was for kids, it's just not the thing to take your kids to. Well, the same thing can happen in comic books if we become so more dark that parents are not going to push their kids to comics.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There is a lot of parallels between professional wrestling and comics. You've got the good versus evil. You've got a fascination with the body, a very muscular body. You've got costumes. You've got very simple struggles that you can kind of get invested in. And you're absolutely right. Affleck just said the other day that he doesn't think he could take his kid to see Batman versus Superman. And when you've made a film about a flying spaceman and a billionaire ninja and you can't take a kid to it, what are you even doing?
Oh, it's sad. It's a sad state of our society today. And I know when you review books and comic books, you're disappointed at times. The graphic novels, it's fantastic they've come about. And it's fantastic that kids are getting more and more in the Middle Ages reading more, meaning like not just going from comics to going to now graphic novels to get them interested in books. But then yet we're making an adult, so you don't know what kids are picking up anymore, what's safe to pick up. And the comic book was the thing. The comics were something that was a safe haven for Gen Xers and baby boomers, and that's changing now. And that's the scary thing, I think, yeah.
Well, in the 90s, the comics went through a period of being very dark, very violent, very extreme. Nowadays, there are a hell of a lot of all-ages comics on the shelves, which are really, really good, that can tell done-in-one stories, that can tell really compelling stories, not necessarily about superheroes, but there's certainly a lot of really good superhero all-ages comics out there. You just got to look for them and ask the people at the store to guide you.
All right. Well, Glenn, I enjoyed the conversation. Best place we can purchase your book and learn more about you. So I know not to take my kids to Batman versus Superman until they're a little older and kind of take them back. There's tons of stuff on Netflix to catch up in the history of both Batman and Superman. And reading your book is one of them as well. Where can we find the info about you and your books?
Well, you can get it at any bookstore that sells fine, nerdy books. It's at Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble. You can find it any old where. It's just The Cape Crusade, Batman, and the Rise of Nerd Culture.
And we can check you out on NPR as well. What day do you do your reviews and stuff on NPR?
Well, the podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour, on which I'm a panelist, comes out every Friday.
Every Friday. All right. Well, Glenn, thanks for calling, and best of luck to you. Thanks again for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. All right. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and we're simulcasting live at Bethel Park Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the first time I've ever done a simulcast live on radio and doing the TV taping. I'm the host, Neil Haley. You can check out my information at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google+, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program star of WeTV, selling it in Atlanta, Gwendolyn Boyd Moss. Gwendolyn, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Gwendolyn. So we'll start out with getting with the show, but the big thing is the book. I mean, because, again, I've worked with kids with autism for over 10 to 12 years as an educator and a tutor and as an educational advocate. So it really touched me when I saw the information about your son and all that. But let's get a little bit of background of you and starting in reality television. I apologize. I was trying to get you on the line a little earlier, but you're busy doing what you do, right, Gwendolyn?
I've got a lot on my plate right now, just trying to get some things done that I think is really going to benefit parents and, of course, children that have mental illness. So, yes, I'm definitely on the move right now.
Yes, so tell us the premise of your show for a second for our listeners out there who have not watched on WeTV and what time it is on and all that stuff.
Okay, so Selling It and the ATL is a real estate show, which I started doing real estate about almost 17 years ago. And I'll tell you, the basis for me even going into the business, and I'm sure every parent will be able to relate to this, especially if you are a single mom, was because I had a child that was diagnosed with autism. And back then, you know, corporate America, it was very hard for me to be in corporate America. I had a child that was having major meltdowns and tantruming at school and getting the phone calls. And so, you know, there were times that I just had to leave. And, you know, there was always the threat of being fired hanging over my head because they just weren't as, it wasn't as much awareness as we have today about it. So real estate was a good field for me to go in. So that's the premise of the show. It's seven other ladies on the show. It's very competitive. But I decided to join in on the show to utilize it for a bigger purpose, which was what I'm passionate about, which is mental illness. And so WeTV, you know, allowed me to really show my family and show what it's like to be a parent that is juggling, working, and having a child that not only has autism, but Justin is dual diagnosed with schizophrenia as well. And so, you know, it's bringing about more mental health awareness, and it's just a great platform that, you know, I could use to do that and platform the children's book and the nonprofit that is launching.
Oh, definitely, and I think that's the thing that you have to do when you want to get yourself out there. It's to help your brand, but also you look at specifically what's the purpose of getting a larger audience to feed your whole purpose in life and message, and that is mental illness. So let's get to the book now, and then we can talk a little bit about the show more, but again, I think that the fact is that you worked, you said, in real estate just because it was flexible, especially when your son was diagnosed with autism. So tell us that part of the story and then, you know, and where this journey's gone since when he was three.
Right, yes. So, you know, I, of course, the children's book, you know, came about because, you know, I saw throughout the years the challenges that Justin had developing relationships with other children or the lack of relationships, you know, that other children were willing to have with him. So, you know, I felt like it was important to create a series that could be used as a teachable tool, something very delicate but yet descriptive that would help them to better understand their peers that have mental illness. I mean, you know, and I know that it's 1 out of 68 children now diagnosed with autism alone.
Yes.
2% schizophrenic. We have bipolar, ADHD. So, you know, I have my big brother, JoJo, and his friend, schizophrenia. I have Mr.
Okay.
Autism, can Andrew come play? And then I have the bipolar band that has captured Ben, and Angelina and the ADHD fairy. Why did I do this? So that we can begin the conversation.
Yes.
So that we can find a delicate way to open up conversation, not just in schools, in Sunday school, churches.
Exactly.
If you have a family member. It's a great way to say, you know what, Ben just threw that chair, but don't be afraid of Ben. Ben has bipolar. Help them to understand. And the
yes.
truth of the matter is it will help us to not have adults. You know, children grow up and they become adults, or teenagers in high school,
yes.
there's bullying, and become adults that are ignorant to mental illness. So I felt like it was important to start training the mindset early on of the younger generation about mental illness.
And that's great. And like you touch upon certain brain disorders and also look at specific diagnoses and are able to heal from those people. Because you lived through it, and we'll talk about that. And that you see that if kids have meltdowns as little kids at 2, but when you see a meltdown at 9, it's a different story. And then people think, oh, it's parenting, or it's this. These children's books will help educate not just the parents that have children with disabilities, but also their friends, other parents, other people to understand this is okay. We have to understand more about kids with disabilities and adults with disabilities and be more understanding, Gwen. And I think you completely, that's why you're doing this, is a message to say, you know what, we are still not understanding enough We don't want to fully include kids in the classroom anymore because they're too noisy. We want to make all these plans instead of really working as a community.
Right. And we have to, as a community. I always say, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. We've all heard that.
Right.
That village for the community of people that have mental illness is our nation. And if we don't really begin to understand that concept, that even if it doesn't affect your household directly, you don't have a child with mental illness or you don't have a family member, we see these situations in the press that come about. We see the Colorado movie theater shooting. We see, you know, Sandy Hook. We see all these situations, and then we say, where are the parents or what happened? Well, we've got to do some things early on as these numbers are growing to help the parents, to help these children, so that we don't have these kind of situations later on that do affect the community that don't necessarily have it in their home.
I completely agree with you, and then they help. So, for example, if a mom has two other kids and one has autism, the parents don't look like, what are you doing? They're going to go pitch in. Oh, can I hold your baby while you handle this issue? We work as a community, and then in the classroom. We understand that it was a rough day, and your other son wasn't able to get their homework done because of a meltdown at home. We're just not understanding about kids with disabilities, and through these books, you're able to do that. And then when you go and do a book signing or a reading, then you get to share more than you're able even to share on your television show, which is your mission.
Right, yes. It is my mission, and, you know, that's the other reason why, you know, I've developed the nonprofit also, which I will officially launch. I have gotten the website up, which is myspecialfriendswithaz.org, and the official launch will be in April. My first fundraising event will be in April here in Atlanta to launch for Autism Month.
Oh, well, that's perfect because we'll probably air this right after Easter for TV, but radio will go out in syndication next week, so you'll get two flows of this. You'll get the radio exposure, then you get the television exposure. So that's excellent how things worked out.
Wonderful.
You definitely
want
to jump this the week before Autism Month. So can I want to get a little bit in the books later, but I really want to get back into your family and your son who was diagnosed at 3. Because people, you chose, again, to get involved in real estate. So how challenging was it once you figured out that you had autism and what you had to do and how you had to change your life in so many ways?
Well, I mean, you know, every parent knows. And for me, you know, I was a single mom. So it was, you know, a little bit, you know, more challenging to get certain things done. But, you know, definitely your schedule is not your own anymore. You know, it really, everything kind of evolves around that. And Justin, like I said, was very severe. He would headbang. He would multiple tantrums. He couldn't go into a mall without measuring his steps. And if you did not go out of that mall the exact same way that you came in, well, he was going to have a meltdown. For me, and what I talk to parents about all the time, you know, how important it is early on to really deal with the diagnosis, because I think when we get the diagnosis, it's an immediate death to all our hopes and dreams that we have for that child. You know, I want him to go to this college. I want him to play in this sport. And all of a sudden, you're sitting in front of a doctor, and you hear all the things that they won't do.
Oh,
you know, and it puts you as a parent even into a depression, you know, because you have this denial about what's going on with your child first. I know I went through it. I had to fill out these huge pamphlets, you know, all the time that said, does your child flicker with the lights? Do they line up the toys? And I would always check the box that said sometimes, and I would write a long paragraph explaining it until one day I realized, okay, Gwen, you are in denial. And so at that point, I became very determined to do everything I could and to also push Justin as far as he could go. And I think that's important. So I was that parent, I'll tell you. I didn't care who was looking or who, you know, saw him have a meltdown. I went back to the same mall every single day.
That's
security
great.
Hated me because they would have to help me, you know, get him back to the car, kicking and screaming. I was determined. But I think a lot of parents, you know, they're embarrassed. You have people, you sit in a restaurant, you feel the eyes on you, you know, and
it's
I've had people be as bold enough to say, you know, can you please, I mean, do you not hear him going off?
Yeah.
Maybe you should go home. And, you know, it's not fair. You know, they have to have some sense of normalcy. They have a right to live a lifestyle and a right, you know, maybe it takes them a little bit longer to adjust to the community in which we live in every day and take advantage of and take for granted that we can function at the level that we do, but give them an opportunity. We have to take those chances, and we have to be understanding of that and embrace and try to help those parents, like you said. Then, you know, my second child came along, and I was scared to death. I think any parent that has siblings, multiple children, you're afraid to even have another child because you don't know if your next child is going to have a disability as well. So I, you know, I watched every single thing that Damon did. Oh, my gosh, if he didn't talk on time, if he didn't crawl on time, if he didn't do this. I overanalyzed every single thing that he did. But then when you start bringing siblings in, and I have two other boys, Damon and Brandon, you do have to deal with, like you said, balancing. Mm-hmm. Now you're balancing work. You're balancing the child that has mental illness, and you're balancing the emotions of the siblings, which is a hard task.
It's very hard. I mean, I can feel for you for sure. And once you did that, you dealt with it, you kept bringing them back to the malls and your different things. Things were not a bed of roses, meaning, you know, like some families you deal with autism and that, you know, everything's fine now. Your son is going to be... it's going to be fine, and you know, just we have to understand he has autism, and this is what he's dealing with. But the older he got, the more difficult it got, didn't it?
The more difficult it got. So you name it, I did it. Behavioral interventions, occupational therapy, speech therapy. He didn't talk till he was nine. Chelation treatment, testing for mercury in the system.
Yes.
You know, I was willing to try everything that I could, and I spent, you know, days, four times out of a seven-day week, going to different therapies, you know, dragging along the other children. You know, but it's a lot of work and, you know, and in the battling with the school system, you know, that's the other thing.
And that's when we get back, we're going to talk about that, Glenda, so we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about that because I'm an educational advocate and I'm in fights all the time with school districts, and I completely understand what you go through. You're watching the Neil Haley Show, simulcasting live on the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show live here at Bethel Park TV Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, simulcasting live on the radio, the Total Celebrity Show. And I'm with Gwendolyn Boyd Moss, star of the new WeTV, selling it in L.A. and at ATL. And we're having a very interesting conversation about your son, what you're going through. So you talked about the older he got, nonverbal, lots of challenges. The school districts were a challenge. So he was going to a school in Atlanta, correct? And you were always battling, having to go back to the school, right? And talk to the teachers, talk to the administrators. Tell us about that.
Definitely. You know, Justin went to public school. And, you know, a lot of times I feel that sometimes, you know, they look at a diagnosis and they kind of put everyone into the same hole. Everybody is the same and everybody, and they don't want to kind of, and doctors do it too. They don't want to, they say this is the do's and don'ts of it, and that's the end of it. And so when you know your child, and I always say the school system should really listen to the parent because we know the child better than they do. And so we can see certain things. And I just knew what Justin had the ability to do. And one of the things that worked in my favor was that he mimicked behaviors. So I would push for him not to be necessarily in a contained environment, but to be mainstream to some degree around kids that were on a level above him. Because I knew he would mimic that behavior. And
children with autism do that all the time. Absolutely.
They do it all the time. He rose to the occasion. But the battle that they give you over that and how they see things and what they need to see things, I think it's so important for parents to really educate themselves. You know
yes.
your parental rights in terms of your IEP. Mm-hmm. Also
yes.
know that if a school system cannot offer you certain things, and I don't know what it is in other states, but I do know in Georgia, if they cannot offer you something in a public school system and you have been in there for 3 years, you
mm-hmm.
can receive a voucher to put that child in a
yeah.
private school.
That's a little different
so,
all over
you know,
the country. A lot of times they're going to have to hire someone like me to go in and just knock them down to make sure you get what you need. But your other schools, there's voucher opportunities, which is great. It just depends on your state.
Right.
That's one of the things we deal with, Gwendolyn, is that some states you can really maneuver the education system, and others, it's just like, this is what you have. And as a parent,
right.
you're the most important advocate for your child. So you had to deal
yes.
with those battles. So did you have to move them to different schools during those challenges?
I did. Yeah, I did, you know, because I was, you know, there was a time that Justin was bussed, you know, early, 6 o'clock in the morning to get to a school that was, you know, pretty much about 45 minutes away. But, you know, you want to best services that you can for that child early on. So it's very important to not just do the research about the school that your child is zoned for, but to research all the other schools around you and their services and find the best fit for your child. Because the truth of the matter is they can be zoned anywhere because of the disability. They can go to any school system I know here in Georgia that they want to if that
right.
particular system that they're zoned for does not provide them with the services that will
mm-hmm.
accommodate them. So
you were in a lot
you know,
of cheer-filled meetings, weren't you, Gwendolyn? A lot of cheerful,
yeah,
argumentative meetings.
I'll tell you, they did not like me in the beginning. The interesting thing is the very same school system that Justin first started with, you know, I started getting phone calls later on, of course, for me to come out and talk with other parents, you know, and help other parents that are struggling with certain things. So, you know, it's worth the battle. It's not always easy, but again, it's being determined because like you said, you're the best advocate for your child. You really are.
Yeah, that's
and,
I'd love to train
yeah.
parents on that, Doc, because guess what? You go in and you don't show the emotion and you know the law and you're a matter of
right.
fact and you're willing to compromise some, not all, but meaning you want to reach your goals, but not to the point where it's impossible, you'll understand what districts have, what districts don't have, and you go to you get what you want. And the more
yeah.
you fight them, the more you have an opportunity to win. If you go
yeah.
in like, oh, sure, I trust you guys, you're not going to get the best, and that's too bad. Now, don't you wish, Gwendolyn, we could have a better system for special education students in the United States? I think our special ed students are missing out so much.
Well, there's limited, you know, services. And, you know, my understanding is, you know, the numbers and the classrooms and the amount of teachers that are going into this field, that number is deteriorating. And it's sad, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we need them to be growing because the numbers of child that are being diagnosed with some form of mental illness are growing. So, you know, when I started hearing about that, you know, it just really, you know,
right.
pierced my heart. It's a sad affair, even in terms of people going into the field of dealing with kids with mental illness and facilities and things like that. I mean, it's that number is deteriorating as well. The other
yeah.
battle, you know, unfortunately I had to deal with was when Justin did become severe and was diagnosed with schizophrenia, having, you know, a situation where he had to go into a facility. You know, parents have that battle. And finding an appropriate place or battling about
yes.
how long and private insurance and all
definitely.
These things.
Yeah, I'm not sorry, Brandon. I was going to say I've not heard of that phenomenon of autistic children developing schizophrenia. So how is he doing now? You talked about he had to be placed at times during this time with the mental illness schizophrenia. What's new with him now?
Well, you know, when he was diagnosed at age 14, he had a brain cyst at age 13. Shortly after that, and removing the brain cyst, some characteristics of schizophrenia came about. And, you know, we put it under the umbrella of autism because we didn't really realize, thought maybe he was mimicking or sounding out movies or conversations.
Yeah.
But he was actually hearing voices, five different voices, and he's very vocal about it. You know, what I have done with Justin, I don't know if you've ever watched the movie The Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. I decided to kind of follow that lead of that. And what Russell Crowe did in that movie, as we know, is that he started to try to distinguish what was real and what wasn't, and began to drown out voices and acknowledge them. A lot of people with schizophrenia have paranoia schizophrenia, and they're keeping it from everyone else. They don't want to talk about it. So I had to get Justin to a place where he...